Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
You know, it's great to be back.
Yeah, and we have a really wild topic today. So think about this. You and your friend, right, you could eat the exact same diet, be the exact same age, and even have super similar medical histories.
Right, totally baseline normal.
Exactly. And then you both get exposed to the exact same winter bug, or maybe you roll up your sleeves and get the exact same vaccine.
Yeah, happens all the time.
But then while you end up hospitalized with this severe immune overreaction, your friend just gets like a mild sniffle, or they generate this highly robust, perfectly targeted immune response.
Which is, I mean, that is a massive conundrum in modern medicine.
It really is. Yeah. Like, why does that happen? Because we've spent decades blaming lifestyle or, you know, prior exposures or just sheer luck.
Yeah, just random chance.
Right. But what if the answer is literally hardwired into our DNA before a threat even enters the room? I mean, what really happens when our baseline genetics predetermine our immune defenses before a threat even arrives?
It's a huge question.
And how could this completely change how we approach autoimmune diseases and personalized vaccines?
Well, what we are looking at in this deep dive is the hidden genetic architecture that dictates how your body builds its very first line of defense.
Right, the hardware.
Exactly, the hardware.
Yeah.
Because the microscopic factories inside us that manufacture our antibody light chains, they are not running on some standard universal software. They are profoundly customized at the hardware level. And we are finally, you know, getting a look at the actual source code.
Which is so exciting. And today we celebrate the work of a multi-institutional team led by researchers at the University of Louisville School of Medicine who have advanced our understanding of how germline genetics shape our immune repertoires.
Yeah, it's a fantastic paper. Because to really understand why our immune responses differ so drastically from person to person, we have to look really closely at two highly complex genetic loci.
Okay, lay it out for us.
So we have immunoglobulin kappa, or IgK, and immunoglobulin lambda, which is IgL.
Right.
And these are the specific regions that encode the light chains of our antibodies. But for decades, the true sequence diversity of these loci across, you know, different human populations, it remained this massive blind spot in genomics.
Like we just couldn't see it.
We couldn't see it well enough because the regions are just notorious for complex structural variations. I'm talking massive tandem duplications and massive deletions.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second because trying to map the IgK and IgL regions with traditional short read sequencing, it's basically like trying to put together a 10,000 piece puzzle where half the pieces are the exact same shade of blue sky.
That is exactly what it's like.
Right, because the standard Illumina sequencing platforms, they read DNA in tiny fragments, maybe, what, 150 base pairs long?
Yeah, super short fragments. Yeah.
So when you try to computationally align those tiny fragments over a region that has a 10,000 base pair duplication,
the assembly algorithm just collapses.
Yeah.
It literally can't resolve the overlap.
It just gives up.
Right. And the standard human reference genome left these loci highly fragmented and incomplete for exactly that reason. Short reads simply cannot span those repetitive elements to give us the actual physical context of the sequence.
Which is a huge problem.
A massive problem.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't properly resolve these genetic blueprints, our understanding of why immune responses vary in, you know, infections or cancer and autoimmunity, it was missing a fundamental layer of causality.
We knew the repertoire was diverse, we just didn't know.
We couldn't map that diversity back to the foundational germline genetics driving it.
Wow. Okay, so to get past that algorithmic roadblock, the researchers for this deep dive deployed long-read, single-molecule, real-time sequencing, or SMRT sequencing.
Right, SMRT sequencing.
And we are talking about reading continuous stretches of DNA that are tens of thousands of base pairs long, which finally gave them the actual picture of the blue sky, to go back to the puzzle analogy.
Yeah, it completely changes the game here.
And they applied this technology to a diverse cohort of 177 individuals, right?
They did. And SMRT sequencing is so vital because the polymerase reads through the continuous DNA molecule, so it captures the full structural context without needing to stitch together ambiguous short fragments.
No more guessing where the blue sky pieces go.
Exactly. But finding the blueprint is really only half the equation. They needed to observe the factory's actual output too.
Oh, right. So they didn't just map the DNA?
No, they paired this high-resolution DNA sequencing with Adaptive Immune Receptor Repertoire Sequencing, or ARSEC.
ARSEC, got it.
So by drawing blood and sequencing the mRNA transcripts of the expressed antibodies, they captured this high-fidelity snapshot of the actual B-cell repertoire floating in those 177 individuals.
Wait, so instead of just comparing everyone to one generic human genome, they built custom maps for all 177 people?
Yes, individual custom maps.
That sounds like a massive computational lift. I mean, why go to that extreme? Doing de novo assembly and building a personalized reference genome for every single subject, that requires an incredible amount of processing power.
It's a huge undertaking, yeah.
Why not just map those long reads against the newest, most complete human reference genome we already have?
What's fascinating here is that mapping repertoire data against a single generic reference genome, it fundamentally distorts the reality of the expressed repertoire.
Really? How so?
Because if an individual has a duplicated gene allele that just doesn't exist in the standard reference, the alignment algorithms will forcibly map those RNA transcripts to the closest mismatch it can find in the generic reference.
Oh, so you completely lose the true origin.
You lose the true allelic origin entirely. By taking on the computational burden of building personalized, custom diploid reference genomes for all 177 subjects, the researchers ensured that every single antibody transcript from the ARSEC data was mapped back perfectly.
To the exact physical gene it originated from in that specific person's body.
Exactly.
That is, I mean, the precision of that approach just blew the doors off what we previously thought we knew about human genetic diversity in these loci.
It really did. They discovered over 300 previously uncatalogued variants.
300?
Yeah, 300. That includes single nucleotide variants, massive structural variants, and entirely new gene alleles that the standard databases simply didn't know existed.
That level of undocumented variation in such a crucial immune locus is just staggering.
And here is the really wild part. By linking those personalized genomes directly to the ARSEC expression data, they established a direct line of causality.
Which means what, practically?
They found that these underlying genetic variants dictate the gene usage for over 70% of the light chain genes in our repertoire.
70%, that is a huge amount of control.
Yeah, it's immense.
Okay, if a single point mutation or structural variant exerts that much control, I want to look at the physical mechanics of how it happens. Like, let's start inside the coding regions.
Sure, let's look at the coding regions.
So the data points to a specific variant in the IGKV229 gene, right? And it introduces a premature stop codon.
Right, which is a premature stop codon is basically a catastrophic structural failure for the transcript.
Like a broken assembly line.
Exactly. When the cellular machinery translates the mRNA of that specific IGKV229 allele, it hits the stop signal halfway through the sequence.
Oh, so it just aborts the process.
Basically, yeah. The resulting truncated protein likely fails quality control in the endoplasmic reticulum, or the transcript itself is destroyed by nonsense-mediated decay.
So the mechanism completely shuts down that specific antibody factory line entirely.
Yes. Individuals carrying this variant show a sheer cliff drop in the usage of that gene in their repertoire. The blueprint is effectively taken out of circulation.
Wow, so that is a binary scenario, right? The gene is broken, the output stops. But the study also highlights variants that just tweak the blueprint, subtly altering the physics of the resulting protein.
Yeah, the missense mutations.
Right, the missense mutation in IGKV1-5 is a prime example of this. It's where a single nucleotide swap changes the amino acid sequence from a lysine to an aspartic acid.
And the biophysics of that swap are profound.
Because of the charge, right?
Exactly. We are shifting from a positively charged lysine residue to a negatively charged aspartic acid residue, right there in the variable domain.
And in the microscopic world of protein folding, electrostatic surface potential is everything.
It dictates everything. Changing a positive charge to a negative charge alters how that light chain will pair with heavy chains, and more importantly, it can fundamentally alter the electrostatic attraction or repulsion in the antigen binding pocket.
So it changes what it can actually catch.
Yes. The ARSEC data show that individuals inheriting the lysine version of this allele exhibited significantly lower usage of it in their active repertoire compared to those with the aspartic acid version.
Okay, so if a broken stop codon ruins the factory and a missense mutation changes the physics of the binding pocket, how much of our immune diversity is driven by those coding changes versus genes that are perfectly intact but just being, you know, suppressed by some other control mechanism?
That is a great question, because the vast majority of these controlling variants actually sit outside the recipe itself in the non-coding regions.
So non-coding regions, okay.
Yeah, they operate as this highly sensitive regulatory control panel. A brilliant example from the data is a single nucleotide variant found in the recombination signal sequence, or the RSS, of the IGLV316 gene.
The RSS.
Right. The RSS is the specific DNA motif that the RAG1 and RG2 enzyme complex binds to when it initiates the VDJ recombination process.
The cutting and splicing that builds the antibody gene. Right. So the enzymes physically grab the DNA helix at that spacer region to bend it and make the cut. So a single nucleotide change in that spacer acts like basically a volume dial.
It does. It alters the physical topology of the DNA double helix.
Yeah.
Even a single base pair substitution in that spacer can make it slightly harder or slightly easier for the RDA complex to physically bend the DNA and initiate cleavage.
That's crazy. So the gene itself is perfectly healthy.
Totally healthy. But the structural geometry of the control panel is tweaked. So depending on which variant you inherit, the biochemical affinity for the splicing enzymes changes.
Which turns the usage volume of that gene heavily up or aggressively down in your baseline repertoire.
Exactly.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, at least to me. The researchers didn't just find these individual dials and broken switches scattered randomly. They uncovered a massive, fundamental structural difference in how the entire IGK locus is governed compared to the IGL locus.
Yeah, the locus architecture. To understand this, we really have to look at linkage disequilibrium, or LD.
LD, okay. Let's define that for everyone.
Sure. Linkage disequilibrium measures the non-random association of alleles at different loci. If two variants are in high LD, they're physically close enough on the chromosome, or maybe evolutionarily advantageous enough, that they are almost always passed down through generations as a tightly coupled block.
Okay, I like to think of it like a prefix menu at a restaurant.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Right.
You order the main course, and the appetizers and desserts are chosen for you automatically. You don't get to mix and match.
Exactly. And the IGK locus, the kappa locus, operates entirely on this prefix model. It has massive blocks of linkage disequilibrium spanning huge genomic distances.
So it acts as a highly coordinated, rigid network.
Yes. Because these massive chunks of genes are strongly coupled together, a single regulatory variant in IGK can dictate the usage of a whole network of genes simultaneously.
You pull one regulatory lever, and a dozen different genes respond in a synchronized population-wide pattern.
Exactly. And from an evolutionary perspective, high LD suggests epistasis.
Epistet.
Basically, these specific combinations of alleles have historically worked so synergistically well together that nature actively suppresses genetic recombination in this region to preserve the winning hand.
Nature doesn't want to mess with a good thing.
Right.
But the IGL locus, the lambda locus, it throws that rigid strategy out the window. It is the a la carte menu.
Totally a la carte. The lambda locus has drastically smaller blocks of linkage disequilibrium and a significantly higher density of underlying mutations.
Mm-hmm.
The genes are not locked into these massive sweeping regulatory blocks.
So you get to pick and choose your appetizers and desserts. It represents a completely divergent evolutionary strategy.
Exactly. Kappa preserves a highly effective, tightly regulated historical baseline. Lambda maintains a highly diverse, flexible genetic sandbox, allowing for constant genetic shuffling to handle entirely novel, unexpected pathogenic threats.
Wow. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, all of these structural strategies, like the massive LD blocks, the regulatory volume dials, the missense charge changes, they ultimately manifest in the physical chemistry of the antibodies circulating in your blood.
Yeah, the physical shape of the actual defenders. The researchers analyzed the CDR3 region of the expressed antibodies.
The CDR3.
Right, the CDR3 is the highly hypervariable loop at the very tip of the antibody arm. It is the primary gripping surface that reaches out and physically binds to a viral antigen.
And the data shows that your inherited germline genetics directly dictate the physical properties of that gripping surface, specifically features like its aromaticity and aliphaticity.
Yes, and just to define those, aromaticity refers to amino acids possessing bulky carbon ring structures, like tyrosine or tryptophan.
The sticky rings.
Right. These rings are exceptional at forming tight, sticky van der Waals interactions within the crevices of a viral surface protein.
And aliphaticity.
Aliphaticity involves open chain carbon structures, which dictate the hydrophobic interactions. basically how the protein navigates the water and lipid environments during binding.
Okay, so the personalized deep dive revealed that the alleles you inherit strictly pre-program the baseline aromaticity and aliphaticity of your naive immune repertoire.
They absolutely pre-program it.
So what does this all mean for us? Because it sounds like the starting line for fighting a disease is genetically predetermined.
It is. Because your inherited loci bias, which light chains your cellular factories churn out, you might naturally generate an abundance of naive antibodies with the perfect aromatic rings to lock onto a specific newly emerged viral strain.
Your baseline is just primed for it. You get the sniffles, your friend goes to the hospital.
Exactly. Your hardware was ready. But conversely, another individual might inherit a variant profile that heavily biases their factory toward producing light chains with an electrostatic surface potential that accidentally mimics the recognition of their own healthy tissue.
Oh, wow. Establishing a baseline susceptibility to an autoimmune disease.
Precisely. We often view the immune system as a purely adaptive learning software that responds to the environment. But this research proves that the hardware you were born with strictly governs the parameters of what that software can learn.
That is wild. But we do have to acknowledge the boundaries of that hardwiring, don't we?
We do.
Because the researchers clearly stratified their AIR-RSEC data. They looked at both the naive antibodies, the ones fresh off the factory line, and the antigen-experienced antibodies that have undergone somatic hypermutation after actually encountering a threat.
And that stratification is critical. Because the massive genetic control we have been discussing, it is most starkly visible in the naive repertoire.
Before it meets the enemy.
Right. Once a B cell recognizes a pathogen and enters a germinal center to rapidly mutate and refine its affinity, which is a process called somatic hypermutation, the environment begins to have a say.
Okay, so the researchers noted that while the germline genetic effects are absolutely still present in the antigen experience repertoire, the signal is slightly blunted.
Yes. Slightly blunted. Meaning somatic hypermutation tries to compensate for any structural deficits in the germline.
Okay, so the hardwiring sets the starting coordinates and the trajectory, but the active infection shapes the final miles of the journey.
That's a great way to put it. The initial bias doesn't fully overwrite the adaptive power of the immune system, but it inextricably anchors it.
It sets the boundaries.
Yeah, and the study sets a completely new standard for genomic immunology, but it also highlights the immediate next steps required for the field.
Like what? What comes next?
Well, building 177 personalized genomes is a monumental achievement, truly. But to accurately map the incredibly rare structural variants hidden in these loci, we need cohorts in the thousands representing global genomic diversity.
Right. 177 is amazing, but we need more data.
Much more. Furthermore, we need to leverage single-cell sequencing to track these genetic impacts across the precise ontogeny of B-cell development. We need to observe how the volume dials shift from the bone marrow to the peripheral blood.
The scale of the invisible architecture here is just stunning.
It really is.
So, to bring the analysis of this deep dive together, the highly complex IgK and IgL genetic regions contain vast, previously hidden variations that directly control the composition and physical properties of our antibody light chains.
Yeah, perfectly summarized.
This means that a significant portion of your immune repertoire's diversity is hardwired into your DNA, establishing a unique baseline defense system before you ever encounter a pathogen.
And this raises an incredibly important question for the future of clinical immunology. We are fundamentally moving away from the illusion of a standardized human immune response, which forces us to rethink how we evaluate efficacy in clinical trials for immunotherapies.
It blows my mind. What does this mean for the future of personalized medicine? If our baseline defenses are this hardwired, could we one day sequence your specific Ig loci to perfectly tailor a cancer immunotherapy or a viral vaccine specifically for your unique antibody factories? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now, stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
in our chromosomes, where every story spins. Tapestries, Lambda Avenues, a city built on chance. Tiny changes in the pavement set the rhythm of the dance. Long roads in one clean reed, like ribbon into view. Maps of hidden alleles telling what the light chains do. It's not the storm that starts the river, it's the stones beneath the flow. A signal in the spacer, a turn you too soon, the voice goes thin. Some trade a charge for thunder, and a new path pulls you in. Between the genes and open air, the regulators breathe. A falling distant chromatic, like a seam beneath a sleeve. And when the world has mocked us, when experience rewrites, the old constraints still whisper in the frequencies at night. A copy gained, a copy missing. Distance, keeping time, choosing V and J like lanterns in a long electric line. A thousand subtle levers, not one single master key. Yet every shift is evident. Sparks or aliphatic colors.